You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join us Friday, noon Pacific, to get in on the action. Lots to do today. We're going to continue our NBA draft scouting report series on today. We're going to do Jared Butler of Baylor. We spoke with Kendall Kaut, who literally, Andy, wrote the book on Baylor's 2021 national title season and knows the kid well. It is a great scouting report. And
yes,
if you are on the fence about who the Lakers should pick, Kendall might sell you on Jared Butler. So make sure you hang around for that one. But the NBA finals, Andy, are over. The Milwaukee Bucks are the champions for 2020-2021. And we have some thoughts about that, and we'll obviously get into kind of how we feel this kind of reflects on the Lakers and what it means, you know, about the Lakers this year and into next year. But let's start with just the Bucks winning, because this turned into a great series. Like, I wasn't sure how long it was, you know, people weren't sure how long it was going to last at the beginning of it, but man alive, this became one of the more entertaining final series in a while.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of focus afterwards on the ratings, which have not been as good as previous ones. And obviously, there are a lot of different factors that can go into that. Everything from, you know, the profile of these teams, markets, pandemic.
Sure.
I will leave that for the people most directly affected by ratings, whether you're talking about the league or the networks, whatever.
Whatever.
In terms of pure basketball, which is what the actual fans should care about, they got something great. And I hope that there were more people watching, you know, just because, again, in 2021, the way this stuff gets consumed is not entirely understood in ways that's reflected in the ratings. I hope more people saw it than the actual ratings, because if they didn't, they missed out on something really fun.
Yeah.
And that would suck for them.
The answer is yes. NBA fans, particularly young NBA fans, consume this stuff on ways that are not network television. But the stories here, Milwaukee winning, and I don't mean this to say that like Phoenix is filled with bad human beings. That's not my point here. But like Milwaukee winning is a victory for outstanding human beings. Like the Bucks are such an easy team to root for. The story of Giannis, we had Miron Fader on. It was last week, I believe it was. Miron Fader,
yes,
who wrote the book on Giannis, which comes out early August, I think August 10th. And you just pre-order that thing and
seriously, pre-order it, because that thing's going to be
it could sell out right now.
So I mean,
really sell out. So like the story of Giannis, who this person is phenomenal. It is something that every human being who has even a casual interest in sports can get behind. Jrue Holiday, if people don't remember, I mean, a lot of people in LA or who follow LA sports know him from his time at UCLA, went to Campbell Hall. You know, he's a kid that a lot of people, not a kid, he was a kid who a lot of people in this city know. Four years ago, whatever it was, he took time off of the season to tend to his wife who was undergoing brain surgery. I mean, like, these are people who are very devoted to their families. You know, Chris Middleton is an outstanding human being.
Bobby Portis, future mayor of Milwaukee, because
yes,
that guy might actually be more popular than Giannis, if that's believable.
Maybe. If anybody is, it's him.
He is a folk hero in that city. He must be likable on some level beyond what the fans think of him, because you may recall when he was a member of the Bulls, he punched out Nikola Mirotic like in a way that left like half of his face destroyed. And uh-huh. From all the reporting I read, his teammates sided with Portis,
yes,
not Mirotic. So
yes,
that, you know, it may reflect a little bit about Mirotic being an annoying human being, but also people must like Bobby Portis
a lot,
like on some level.
It's so, I mean, just it is a good story, and like,
yeah,
I think for what was such a difficult season,
great story for Mike Budenholzer.
It is. I mean, and we'll get into this in a second here, because I find the Budenholzer part of it completely fascinating. But just after to wrap up this point, like after what has been a really difficult season, it has not been fun. It has not been an overall enjoyable experience to cover the NBA this year. I think to follow the NBA, to watch it between COVID and the protocols and the injuries and just the stress, it wasn't fun. To end with a great story and a great finals gets you excited for next year. I am really excited about what's coming next year.
Yeah, I mean, for the Lakers in particular, you know, we talked about this right after they were eliminated by Phoenix in the first round. If they were not going to win a championship, it was for the best that they went out early. I mean, you could even argue that given what ended up happening, you could have been okay with them not even making the playoffs because they ultimately needed that rest.
What's the difference? Like if they're if they're going to lose in the first round, you might as well lose a round before that.
Right. Just even get an extra 10 or 12 days, whatever the case may be. But you come back theoretically with LeBron rested, AD rested, and a roster that, you know, we will give Rob Pelinka the benefit of the doubt is at least as well constructed as last year's, if not better. The Lakers are going to have as great a chance as anybody in the league, but it doesn't feel like any team is that much better than anybody else. We never got a full taste of what the Nets are, but you know, you can still see the risks of a team that is as top heavy as they are, you know, like the potential pitfalls. There are a lot of teams.
You could say they have a little bit more of a margin than the Lakers do because they have three of those guys instead of two.
Sure, but ultimately it didn't really matter.
You're right. And I look at this from the Lakers' perspective and I see, you know, Phoenix getting the finals, pushing, you know, to six games and all that, you know, really getting, you want to talk about a team that ramped up the clock, you know, on their timetable to just warp speed. But the Lakers, I think with a healthy Anthony Davis, I will continue to contend, win that series. And if they win that series, I don't think they lose to Denver without Jamal Murray. They beat them with Jamal Murray last year. I think they win that series. Like, for all the imperfections that they had and the questions about centers and Andre Drummond and do they have enough shooting and all this, I don't know if they would have beaten Milwaukee because I think the Bucks are very, very good, obviously. They won a title, and I actually think they match up well with the Lakers. Like, that would have been a difficult team for the Lakers to score against. I think the Lakers are a finals team.
Especially too, Brian, if Magic Johnson has his way, he was tweeting during the game, got a series of these. Watch out, LeBron, KD, and Giannis are right there coming for your throne with the eyeballs emoji. Then 27 minutes later, if Chris Paul, you can just feel the wheels turning in Magic's head over the course of 27 minutes, probably at that point the game having ended. If Chris Paul opts out of his contract with the Suns, his first call should be from his best friend LeBron James and the Lakers. And within the same minute, you know, exact same minute, a big three with LeBron, Chris, and AD will equal an NBA championship. This, Brian, is why Magic quit as president of basketball operations.
Because this would be tampering.
Right. But this, no, you're missing it. He didn't quit because he didn't want to do the tampering. He quit because he wanted to do the tweeting. Like, the tampering is like the added bonus. That's the icing on the cake. The cake is the tweets.
But like, let's explore
this. Simply getting credit, if he had been president of basketball operations, just getting credit for having brought in Chris Paul as a third piece and getting a championship doesn't mean anything if you can't tweet about it before.
That's true.
What's the point?
Let's talk about this because there is an avenue by which, because, you know, the Lakers obviously can't pay Chris Paul what he is deserving.
And but I'm 100% Andy, sure that Magic is not aware of the Lakers' cap situation when he sent that out.
That's probably
100%.
I think that's probably just a safe bet. At the very least, it's a safer bet than it should be. But Andy, what if it's not the Lakers that pay Chris Paul? We'll talk about that next.
This episode is brought to you by Spotify Greenroom, the first social audio platform for sports fans. The app is free to download. Once you're in, you can talk with me, Brian, other fans, athletes, insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. In this case, obviously the Lakers. We will be hosting our room for Locked On Lakers once a week. It is always Friday, noon Pacific time. Join in the conversation. It's the perfect place to start or join conversations about the league. So go to the free Spotify Greenroom app right now. Download it. It's currently available on all iOS devices. Make sure to create a profile, link to your Twitter, and join the group for the latest league updates. Follow us at Cam Brothers to be noted when the room goes live. It's always under A. Kamenetsky. You're not going to want to miss it. Again, Fridays, noon Pacific. We want to hear from you guys. Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports.
So the most the Lakers could, you know, give Chris Paul is, you know, something like if they give him that mini mid-level, all of it would be like, I don't know, I think it's, is it 4 years, 3 years, whatever it is. So we'll call it like $20 million. The Suns, theoretically, if he stays over 2-3 years, whatever it is, could probably give him, you know, reasonably, I think people expect to make around 30. So there's about a $60 million difference between what the Lakers could give him and what the Suns could give Chris Paul, Andy.
That is sizable.
Yeah, the Lakers can't make that up. But
no,
the last time LeBron took a shit, $60 million came out. let's be honest here.
Like, that's one of those things you're both happy about and you should see a doctor.
And it does tremendous damage to your plumbing. Like, you have to be ready for that. So what if somebody just says, look, CP, I'll make it up to you. Like, that's like 47 seconds of the interest just off the money I'm getting from my Beats sale. I got you. I got your back. I'll write you the check. Just don't spend it. You know, we got to do a Goodfellas thing here. Don't show up with the Cadillac. Don't show up with the fur coat, or I am going to have to put you in a refrigerator car or freezer car. But, you know, like, LeBron could make that up, right? And Chris Paul would keep his mouth shut. Like, I have no illusions that Chris Paul would blabbing around town.
I mean, there's a couple things with that. First of all, I don't care how tight they are. I don't care that Chris Paul is Bronny's godfather.
Yeah.
You get that money up front.
Oh, no, you still got to see it. You got to see the money.
This money is up front. If it's a check, you are cashing it. Like, you need
evidence. It's not a check. And you can't Venmo it either because, you know, you have that subject line where you have to put what the money is for. You can't Venmo somebody $60 million for under-the-table payments.
No, I mean, well, you can come up with something different. I mean, you can write in whatever you want, but, you know, like, you know, barbecue. Like, yeah, we really threw down with a lot of folks. That was a
dinner.
Lot of
dinner.
That was a lot of food going there. But okay, first thing, you get the money up front. Again, I mm-hmm. don't care how tight they are. Second of all, Chris Paul has to quit as president of the Players Association, because in that position, you cannot take that far below market value. Like, you absolutely,
no, it's
frankly,
true.
Frankly, LeBron probably has to quit as vice president, because in order to maintain the appearances, he would object to Chris Paul doing that on general principle. So the two of them both have to step aside.
Yeah.
And then in a way that's totally unsuspicious, Chris Paul signs for the mini.
Right. I mean, you workshop it. But I mean, maybe it's better if CP quits, but LeBron doesn't and strenuously objects and CP signs. There's room to make this. But I'm just saying Magic maybe onto something.
I think they both just have to decide that in terms of leadership with the league, it's time to pass the batons.
Yes.
Like, it was just the right time. You know, especially with both of them in their career twilights, you know,
it makes a lot of sense.
They want to focus on the court.
You mentioned Mike Budenholzer before. And, you know, what I think is amazing about this is, like, if he doesn't win a title this year, there's a decent chance, even if he gets to the finals and loses, the Suns win in six or five or six or whatever, like, he could get fired.
Dude.
Like, he was getting fired all the way through the playoffs anytime the Bucks got near a loss.
Dude, I'm fairly certain Bucks fans still want to fire.
They might. And by the way, he's no better a coach or worse a coach now than he was 2 weeks ago.
Well, I don't know. I mean, assuming everybody was right about why he was a crappy coach to begin with, you know, I mean, assuming people that, were correct.
Right, but I'm saying the guy is the guy. Yes. And either we're or we're wrong. But the guy is, and this is, you know, I have we make this argument all the time. You see it in college football more than anything. If he loses to UCLA, he's out. You know, if he beats them, you know, great, you're 3-8, but you beat UCLA, all of it's stupid. But like, it gets to one of the interesting things that when we talk about things, when we look at,
doesn't you know, help that Bud always looks confused. Yeah, he has resting confused face.
RCF.
Yeah,
it gets to something that I think is applicable, obviously now to the Bucks, but certainly the Lakers as well. Like, we look at results, gigantic trades. The Lakers swing a gigantic trade for Anthony Davis. They win a title. In my mind, that justifies everything that comes afterwards. The Bucks swing a massive, riskier trade for Jrue Holiday, who just because he's not as good as Anthony Davis. And, you know, you could argue they win that trade when Giannis signs. But overall, like, this validates that deal. And so it's like, what is it, the idea? Is it the process? Is it the result? I mean, like, that trade was a good idea either way, but now it's bulletproof.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's all about getting to the, you know, to the finals, winning that championship. And today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoyed it. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. We can all enjoy the games a little more this season. There's a certain amount of reasonable with both of those deals. Mm-hmm. Like, it is reasonable what the Lakers did, trading away all of their draft capital, all of their young players. They took a massive swing for Anthony Davis. Even knowing how great Anthony Davis is, that is a lot to give up. Mm-hmm. The Bucks needed to take a big step forward, not just to retain Giannis and make sure that he remained confident, but also just look, we have not advanced. We need to do something pretty radical in order to get ourselves over the hump. And Jrue Holiday is a really good player, but they nonetheless gave up a lot for him. Both were reasonable, but a championship is the difference between a reasonable trade that can still be criticized and a reasonable trade that is bulletproof no matter what happens afterwards. Like, I've heard Laker fans express a lot of concern that Anthony Davis for the rest of his time as a Laker is going to be injured. There's always going to be those health concerns. You wonder if he's durable enough to really take that baton from LeBron to truly be the face of the organization that everything is built around. Doesn't matter. Everything is justified from this point forward because they have that championship with the Bucks. Jrue Holiday, that game five he had, which was absolutely sensational. They do not win that game without him. And then the defense that he played throughout the entire series, it doesn't matter what happens with Holiday moving forward. That trade is justified.
Yeah.
Period. And as opposed to, really quick, as opposed to like what the Clippers are going through right now. And the moves they made were completely reasonable too.
Right.
With acquiring Paul George and acquiring Kawhi Leonard and everything they gave up to make that happen, totally reasonable. If they don't win a championship, it's going to be like second guessed. It is going to be considered a failure, even with the same amount of reasonable.
Right, I think the general belief, I think rightly, that you do that trade every single effing time to get Kawhi Leonard, and essentially you're trading for Paul George at the same time. Like, you do that, and to me, the Lakers, you know, to tie it back to the Lakers before we get to the preview. They have the stuff anymore to make a giant trade. I don't think there's anything out there anyway, but like, it's all relative. And so, you know, trading Talen Horton Tucker, for example, probably comes in a pretty big swing. It involves, you know, Kuz or KCP or some sort of well-engineered sign and trade with, you know, Harold opts in and then he gets traded, whatever it might be. To whatever extent the Lakers can make a swing, another lesson that this year teaches me is like, you got to do it. Like, you can't, you can't completely ignore the long term because you don't want to just screw yourself. But, you know, you have LeBron James, who is still an elite player, and paired with Anthony Davis, who is an elite player. You can't hold 10% of that potential back, 5%, whatever number. because you're worried about what things are going to look like 4 years from now.
Look, man, we saw this with the Lakers down the stretch of Kobe's career, even before the Achilles. They gave up everything to try to extend that thing as long as they possibly could, like the draft picks that they attached to Derek Fisher and to Luke Walton to move mm-hmm. those guys. You know, everything they gave up for Steve Nash, you know, getting in Dwight Howard. And it ended in a spectacular grease fire explosion.
Oh, it was awful. It was terrible.
But
it was the right thing to do.
It was exactly the right thing to do.
Now, I would say this. The contrast with that is what they tried to do after Kobe got hurt, where they're throwing stupid money at players that were not going to get them where they wanted to go because they were panicking because they didn't have stars and they weren't where they were supposed to be and all that. And off twice going after LaMarcus Aldridge and failing. The best thing that happened to them was that they didn't get any of those guys.
But in terms of
Kobe was still Kobe, absolutely you do that.
Ramon's sessions turned out not to be the answer they thought he would be. But you know what? You make those type
you
of
do
swings.
It. You have to do it. And I think the lesson here is if you can pick, I love THT, and I think he could be a really transformational player in terms of how they're able to remain good while they remain in cap hell. Like depending on what kind of contract he said, like he's 20 years old. But if you can get a guy who's going to be definitely better for you next year, maybe the year following, maybe not 4 years down the road, but definitely better next year, definitely the year after, you do it. And that may not make you better because that guy could get hurt, or Davis could get hurt, or LeBron could get hurt, or maybe some other team just super teams you even more, or whatever it is. But you got to try. And I think that needs to be the lesson. That is the lesson I get out of these finals, out of these playoffs, and it's something I'm sure we will talk a lot about. Before we get to the preview, I do want to remind people, please sign up and subscribe to Locked on Lakers on YouTube. Really excited about how quickly the channel is growing, but we want to get it going even faster than it is. I don't want to make a big deal out of this. The Locked on Celtics people have more subscribers than we do.
Seriously. I mean them?
Celtics?
Really?
We're going to let that happen, Lakers fans?
I thought Laker fans had pride.
It feels a little cheap to go there, but I'll do it.
I mean, granted, they got most of their followers in the 60s, but still.
I see what you did there. But anyway, so we have Kendall Kaut coming up next. He's going to preview Jared Butler from Baylor. It is a great, great, great scouting report. And when it is over, there's an outstanding chance that you will want to draft this kid. So stick around for it. We'll do it next.
Locked on Lakers brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Bars covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew, unlike the other ones that are just deadbeats and require like a jackhammer and a saw and just like Crocodile Dundee knives.
Incisors that most of us don't have.
It's just ridiculous. But Built Bars, they're healthy. They're great if you're trying to lose or maintain weight. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great for keto diets. They taste even better than before. You've got the 12 original flavors like raspberry, coconut almond, salted caramel, banana bread, new flavors like cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, cookies and cream. Perfect for someone like me who just loves cool taste combinations. You are never going to get bored feeling like you're eating the same thing over and over with Built Bars. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your first order. Again, use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
Locked on Lakers also brought to you by Rock Auto. I'm not a car guy, but over time, there are a few things I've learned I can safely handle on my own, whether it's just learning off the internet, watching people do stuff to my car, whatever it is. Some stuff's kind of simple, but I'm still not confident when I walk into a store. And it's easy to shake that confidence. Is this the best part that I need? Is there something that's better? I don't want a bunch of questions thrown at me, a bunch of intimidating stuff from a salesman that may be just trying to sell me a part that he's got in the back room or the warehouse or whatever it is. I have a computer in my pocket. It's my phone. I have a computer at home. It's my computer. I can go to rockauto.com and I can find the part that I need at a reliably low price, 20, 30, even 50% lower than chain stores or a new car dealership. They have everything to keep my car running, from engine control modules to brake parts, to tail lamps, to motor oil, even new carpet. So whether it's your classic, your daily driver, everything in between, Get it at rockauto.com delivered to your door. Again, rockauto.com right now. Go there, see all the parts available for your car or truck, and write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, so Andy, we continue our draft preview series. We've covered a lot of really interesting players, and another one today, kind of a mixture, I think, a little bit of the high ceiling, high upside guys and more of the veteran guys. Jared Butler from Baylor won a national title, shoots the ball very well, and has a lot to offer, particularly as an offensive player. And we're going to learn more about him with Kendall Kaut, who quite literally wrote the book on Baylor's championship season. It's how they drew it up, Baylor's unforgettable 2021 championship season. He's also the editor-in-chief for Our Daily Bears. That's the SB Nation Baylor site. Kendall joins us. Thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Very happy to talk about Jared Butler today.
So he's a guy who, you know, he's not a one and done, but he's not a, you know, not a senior. You know, he's right in between. Where is he, do you think, currently in his development as a player? What was his evolution like at Baylor?
Sure. So he got a lot better his junior season athletically. Jared came very close to going pro after his sophomore season. I talked with him the day he made that announcement, and a lot of folks thought he was going to go pro. Jared told me that he thought he was going to go pro during various times with quarantine. But the thing that stuck out this season is when he went through the draft process after his sophomore year, he met with 22 NBA teams, and a recurring theme was that his athleticism had to improve. And he made a joke to me that, you know, I'm 20 years old. Is it like I'm going through puberty now that I can suddenly dunk for the first time? And Jared could never dunk as a freshman or a sophomore. Then this year he had a few really good slam dunks. I think his athleticism has improved. And you look at the NBA draft now, there are a lot of guys that reclassify and move up a grade, but they're still 19 years old as freshmen. Well, Jared has not even turned 21 yet and has been the most outstanding player of the Final Four. And so compared to a guy like Sharif Cooper, who is only 6 months younger than Jared Butler, but was a freshman at Auburn, Jared Butler is a junior at Baylor, so he's a very young junior.
Before we even get any further in terms of a breakdown as a player, he'd recently been assigned to a fitness to play panel. It reportedly had been related to his heart, which wasn't necessarily a surprise. It's my understanding that this has been something that's been monitored in the past, and he's recently been cleared, thankfully, so everything can proceed. He can work out for teams. But what do we know about this situation, and how much, if at all, is it anticipated to be a concern for Jared Butler's career?
I don't think it's a concern at all for him playing. It was one of those deals where the advice I think he got was that the risk was very low each year he would play. But it's one of those deals where if you're the NBA, you might not want to approve him. Isaiah Austin, who played at Baylor, had Marfan syndrome. There's a doctor that's cleared Isaiah Austin, which is why he plays in international leagues, but the NBA won't clear him. That was kind of the concern with Butler, that if you're a medical panel, it's just easier to say no. And in fact, the way the panel's set up, there's kind of a presumption to declare them not eligible to play. So when all three doctors unanimously said he could play, I think that's a very good sign for Butler. And I've talked to a couple of people that do those NBA mock drafts or some of the bigger sites. And they've told me that that was one of the things that they kind of split the difference on, that, well, rather than having Butler go at number 20, let's put him down at, you know, 30 and just see, well, he may not be eligible. So I think it was a real concern, but I think with the unanimous approval of that panel, it's a really good sign for his NBA career.
He's a guy who averaged, you know, 16 points as a sophomore, almost 17 as a junior, you know, pretty good numbers, particularly in college. But, you know, obviously you go, you know, he was drafted 22nd by the Lakers. There's Anthony Davis. There's LeBron James. He's not going to be looked upon as a primary scorer. How well equipped do you think he is to go from that kind of focus of an offense to role player in an offense?
I think you can do that quite well. And I think the Baylor team sets that up well because of how skilled the backcourt was this season. If people didn't watch a lot of college basketball this year, the easiest comp was that 2005 Illinois team with Darren Williams, Dee Brown, and Luther Head. Okay. Maceo Teague is probably going to play internationally for a few years because he needs to fix a hitch in his jump shot. But he was a dominant scorer. He went 10 of 12 from three-point range against Texas Tech and blew out Chris Beard, who's kind of the talk of college basketball, that one day joined the NBA. And Davion Mitchell is likely to be a top 10 pick in the draft and was very skilled. And then Matt Meyer might be a first-round pick next year. So because there were so many options, there were nights where Jared could step back and be a guy who would just hit a few threes or lockdown on defense, because that was another thing they said he needed to improve upon. So I don't think he's a guy who's going to come to LA if the Lakers are fortunate enough to land him and say, I got to shoot 15 times a game. If the Lakers want to give Dennis a max contract and have LeBron and AD still hanging around, I'm sure you guys have talked about that a little bit. I think he's going to be fine to say, you know what, if I only take 5 shots a game, I can make that work.
From his freshman to junior year, each year his percentages from both the field and three-point went up. Beyond just gaining experience as a player, is there anything that you saw over those 3 years that would account for the improvement, whether specific shots that he took, skill sets that he improved upon, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I think his floater got a ton better later on, which I think is a good skill for Butler. Given his athleticism is not in the elite category in terms of first step and top-end speed, his ability to get into the paint, kind of stall and make a floater might be Mike Conley-esque, although he's right-handed versus lefty. And for some reason, we can never compare different-handed guys to each other in these NBA comps for God knows what reason. You know,
look, man, these are the rules, Kendall. Yeah. Like, who are we to change them?
Yeah, if you're left-handed, you're always Zach Randolph or Chris Bosh or Mike Conley. So I know I'm breaking the mold here. But I think he has a good floater, which added to his game. And I think the other thing he added was he got a lot better at shooting as a standstill shooter. He'd been a very good off-the-ball shooter as a freshman, but he's a lot better standstill. So those catch-and-shoot three opportunities when you play with LeBron James or Anthony Davis would be there for Jared.
How much do you think the experience of, you know, going through, like you alluded to, his accolades in the Final Four and winning the national title, how much do you think that prepares him to go to a team, whether it's the Lakers, somewhere in the back half of the draft, ostensibly to a playoff team like that?
I think it definitely does. I mean, he dealt with all of the biggest moments and all of the biggest stages, what he was dealing with in terms of you got to play Gonzaga on a quick turnaround, and everybody says Gonzaga is the best team in the country. They were down 7 points to Villanova and were able to rally back and win. He's been kind of the focal point of the sport, and I know college basketball compared to the LA media market, especially the Lakers, is not comparable. But somebody that could answer those questions on the biggest stage, whether it was the media before the national title game. He was on the NCAA's panel as a student representative, one of only 2 players in the country on that board. He spoke out at Baylor when the protests were going on about kind of, hey, we need to talk about racial justice at Baylor. He was a leading voice at Baylor about how to bridge concerns about race. All of those things he could do, I think, are signs you can meet the moment in LA. But until you're actually in LA, I think a lot of people would say it's a tough thing to know about.
It's a cliche to refer to certain athletes as winners, but Butler really has won a lot in his basketball career. I believe he won a high school state championship. So, you know, he's done it in high school, college. Like, is there something about either his personality or the way he approaches the game that you think accounts for just him being around and a part of a lot of winning?
Yes. I think the best example of that winning is his freshman season. Tristan Clark was a dominant big man. He'd been a preseason All Big 12 player the next season, but he goes down with a knee injury, and Baylor loses to Texas Southern, which you don't have to follow college basketball to know that's not good. They lose to Stephen F. Austin, who was not good that season. And
that's not even a real school.
It doesn't seem like it should be.
That's made up.
But they get absolutely housed by Kansas in that first game, and so Mekhi Mason played for Baylor and had blown them out when he played for Yale, and so that Baylor team appeared absolutely dead. And then Jared steps up, becomes either the best or second best player throughout the end of that season. But I think it's his attitude and his willingness to just say, whatever you need me to do, I'm okay with it. He took it very personally when the Big 12 coaches voted Cade Cunningham the Big 12 player of the year, because if you look at all the stats or you watch the games, it was pretty clear that the Cade hype had gotten a little bit out of control. And, you know, sure enough, in the NCAA tournament, I don't know why Cade Cunningham – we go off on a tangent about Cade Cunningham and his Evan Mobley being discounted. I think he is. But – in terms of Jared Butler, he is an absolute winner. He is humble, but he meets the moment when he feels disrespected. And so if Jared does drop pick 22, I know he's going to think, I'm a lot better than pick 22. Why is Kai Jones or why is Greg Brown getting drafted before me? And I think that'll fuel him.
I like that idea. You are one of the rare guys right now who has had a chance to meet some of these players and get to know them, because so many of us who do this, you know, it's COVID, you're at a distance. And if a guy's been in college for a year and a half, may not have ever met him in person, but you've actually, you know, Jared Butler. What kind of guy is he?
An absolutely fantastic guy. He comes from a great family. His dad's a civil engineer. His mom's a high school speech teacher. He's incredibly humble. He was the Big 12 Scholar Athlete of the Year, Baylor's Scholar Athlete of the Year, and the Big 12 Basketball Player of the Year by the AP. And the 24-year history of the Big 12, he's the only person to have won that accolade. He graduated with a 3.27 in business in 3 years. So he's going to be one of the smartest guys immediately on the Lakers. Obviously, LeBron has that photograph.
What's the impressive part, Kendall? I'm waiting for the stuff that's supposed to floor me.
Yeah, it's just like you get Jared Butler. It's not one of those guys you're going to be like, what's he doing? What's going on? Is he trying to hawk a pyramid scheme on us? He knows what's going down.
I've seen him described a lot in different scouting reports and stuff as like a solid but not great athlete. Doesn't necessarily have an incredible size. I don't know if necessarily his position is obvious, like the length, that sort of stuff. And he's not seen as necessarily having huge upside in the NBA. Do you agree with that? But then also, how high do you think his floor is? Because that floor is really important.
Sure, I think the floor is very high. I honestly think the best comp for Jared Butler is Malcolm Brogdon. And the reason I say that is because Jared Butler certainly does not have outlier athleticism. And as you mentioned, I think Jared's 6'3 or 6'4 legitimately. I stood next to him at my book signing, and they're not lying about the height with Jared Butler. But the two things I think that can make up for not having outlier athleticism, which you pretty much have to have in the NBA nowadays, is we know he can shoot the three, but the two things that stick out to me are incredible basketball IQ and the passes he makes, the way he can make one-handed passes cross-court. And the second thing beyond basketball IQ that I think really sticks out about what Jared Butler is going to be able to do in the NBA and doesn't get play is he decelerates so well. And that's an athletic skill that's not tested very well, but I'm not saying he's going to be Luka Doncic or James Harden. He won't be. But those are the kind of skills that if you're not an elite-level athlete can take you to the next level. And so that's not going to make him Doncic or Harden, I don't think. And Jared, you can use this as an insult if you listen to this and say he said I wasn't James Harden or Luka Doncic. I took that personally. But I think what he can do is the way he can decelerate is an athletic tool that is not kind of caught well enough. And that's how a guy who's not 6'7 playing point guard nowadays can be very good.
My last thing for you, Kendall, we had this sort of this vibe when we talked about Chris Duarte from Oregon. When you look at the whole package and how they're described, he comes off very much as a guy who has more value to a good team than he would a bad team.
At least right now, out of the draft.
For a guy to come in and play next year and, you know, next year or two. Does that apply, you think, to Butler as well?
I think he'd be really good on any team, but I think his best value is on a good team because I think he will fit the role well and he's not going to get offended if he's playing 12 minutes one night or if he gets a DNP for a couple of games. I don't think he's going to blow up at Frank Vogel and say, what's he doing? But I think he's a guy that, you know what, if Talen Horton-Tucker or Alex Caruso aren't exactly playing at the highest level in the playoffs next season, and you're saying, you know what, let's unleash Jared Butler. He goes 5 of 7 from 3-1 game. You knock out, I don't even know who's going to be necessarily good in the West next season. Let's say the Nuggets for once get healthy and roll the dice well. That's not going to happen. You're not going to count on Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray coming off an ACL. But let's just say that happens and the Lakers are in the Western Conference Finals against Denver. You get one game where Jokic and Michael Porter are hot. Well, Jared Butler comes in, goes 5 of 7 without much playing time. I think he can do that.
I like that. It's a very specific scenario.
Unfortunately, it's only that scenario. It has to be that scenario where he can thrive.
Kendall Kaut, the information is fantastic, and therefore I'm guessing the book is as well. It's How They Drew It Up, Baylor's Unforgettable 2021 Championship Season. He's also the editor-in-chief at Our Daily Bears. Which you can catch over at SB Nation. That's the Baylor site. This was fantastic information on Jared Butler. We really appreciate the time.
Yep. Thank you, fellas. I appreciate it. And the new Space Jam is not that bad. So good sign for the Lakers.
We just talked about that.
We did the whole show on it. It's not bad.
It is not bad at all. Don Cheadle is amazing in this thing. His level of commitment is it's unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
Appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Heck yeah.